My dog literally eats stuff off the ground outside and I have to pull it out of his mouth because I'm afraid because I live in Hollywood. I don't know what the fuck is on the ground. I pulled something out of his mouth. It was another dog's shit. It was another dog's shit that I pulled out of my dog's mouth. Because I didn't know what it was. I just saw him eating something and I was like, he can't eat something. It was, I had to walk them back to my apartment. I had to get my keys in my left hand because my right hand had a strange dog's shit on it. I almost threw up then and I'm going to throw up now. Like, it was so gross.
I mean, if you're not throwing up on a daily basis from what your pets are doing, then I feel like, what are you
doing? It's so disgusting. Yeah.
Welcome to Real Talk Unfiltered. I'm Catherine Allie Zaslavsky.
And I'm Raymond Liu.
And we're about to dive deep into the experiences of trusted leaders in our community and get real about the issues facing Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders.
Here, we don't rely on sound bites. We make space for the unfiltered truth of AAPI existence to make the political personal.
Let's dive in. Paulumi, it's so good to see you. It's going to be great to hear your dogs when we inevitably do. Would you mind introducing yourself and also your dogs to our audience of hundreds of thousands of millions?
Oh my gosh, hundreds of thousands of millions. I'm Paula V. I am a stand-up comedian and a writer, and I was a biomedical engineer. And my dogs are Valentino, and my foster dog is Junior, and they are from Love Leo Rescue. So if you want to get Junior, he's like a pit Chihuahua mix. So he's got like Steve Buscemi eyes. He's Ooh. So cute.
Is this a he's got like googly eyes. Endorsement from Steve Buscemi?
For the rescue. It's for Buscemi rescues everywhere.
Oh my gosh. Know? It's just Steve Buscemi puts like his stamp of approval on any dog that he thinks has his essence. Because I feel like a lot of dogs don't look like him, but have a Buscemi-esque way of
I think this dog has more the googly eye, like the Buscemi googly eyes.
The character actor, yeah.
But he's too hyper for a Buscemi character. I feel like this is more like a Kramer from Seinfeld vibe.
Ooh.
Just like busting in a room, you know?
So your dog
always, everything's an emergency, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Honestly, is that not the energy that we should all bring to, honestly, everything that we do? Because that's what capitalism does, is it tries to convince you that you're not worth bursting into a space and just like interrupting everything.
Or you can't eat like spaghetti in the shower, which is something he did or something.
Yeah. I would like, eat spaghetti Seinfeld in the shower. Music. Yeah, I know. I see your dog's tail like waving in the background. He's like, hell yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I think I don't know if they're doing that so much as destroying whatever's in his crate, but.
Perfect. Okay, so tell us about you. I mean, we can keep talking about your dogs and their illustrious journey through stand-up, but tell us about you. How'd you go from being a biomedical engineer to being comedian? Now you write for Leave It or Love It. You got
show. Love It or Leave
love
It.
Love It or Leave It. Oh my God, I'm so sorry. Leave It. Leave okay. It and Love It.
Yeah.
Hate it and leave it.
So I started my PhD and I started stand-up at the same time. My ex had done improv and I like went to Sketchfest performer parties because he had gotten into Sketchfest with the video that I took of his improv because I was a good girlfriend.
This is what happened.
And I met all these amazing comedians and I really loved comedy. Like I listened to podcasts by comedians. I like was a huge comedy nerd and I got to meet all these people and I was like, oh my God, this is the life that I want to live. And then I went to this performer party and I asked like local stand-ups, like where they perform stand-up. This was in the Bay. And then I went and I did my first open mic and then I came back to another performer party and I like talked to John Hodgman and Paul F. Tompkins about my first open mic experience. So it was like a crazy weird moment. And then I didn't really do it much. I did like three mics over the course of like 9 months in the Bay. And then I moved to LA. And when I started my PhD at USC is when I started going hard at stand-up, which I promised myself I would do. And then it kind of like took over. And then 3 years in, I had to make the decision to take that leap.
Mm-hmm.
And then the pandemic happened. So I like quit my PhD right before the pandemic happened. And it was like chaos. But it turned out okay. I got my writing job during the pandemic. And now I am living a lifestyle that I feel like is much more conducive to me and like what I want to do in life and kind of the pace that I want to go at. And so I feel very lucky and I feel very grateful for my job.
Wait, can you talk a bit more about like pace and like the type of lifestyle that you're living? Because I feel like people feel like being a stand-up is probably like a hustle. Like, you know.
It is a hustle, but it's also like a hustle on your own terms. You know, like, I mean, you do have like I have a job with a boss and, you know, like a writing team and a production team. Tino, stop it. Hey.
This is the dog content we were all promised.
This is the dog content.
You're welcome.
And yeah, so I do have like a boss, I have deadlines and stuff, and I have like my, but I, a lot of it is like set by me. So like before I had a professor who was like always disappointed in me and my work.
I know, and you now get to be I'm always just disappointed
in me and my work. Exactly.
Oh my God.
And now I get to set the deadlines and I get to be late on my podcast episodes, you know? So yeah, so it's also like, I actually have time to like sometimes work out or like, you know, like have dogs and explore my own interests and work in mutual aid and do things that I like. Whereas, and you know, it's, I'm not at the level that I want to be in stand up or in writing and I'm working towards that, but I'm also like sustaining myself at a pace that I can at this time. I'm sure, I hope it will get busier, but yeah, I don't think if I was working in academia or even in industry, I would have that freedom. And I also think I wouldn't have that creative freedom either. Like I get to explore ideas and projects and things that interest me, like my podcast, for example. Whereas if I were to be working for someone else in STEM, I wouldn't be able to do that.
So I don't want to come in with receipts, but I actually do kind of want to come in with receipts because I just saw a TikTok. I just saw a TikTok that you put out and you were like, if you're not in my personal network, if you haven't met me in person, like you're not included in this, just keep swiping. And I didn't, obviously I watched it and you were like, stop being so successful.
Yeah, it's really frustrating. Like my friends are fucking killing it. And I'm like, I'm tired. I don't want to do this anymore. Like, I'm like, it's awesome to have all your friends do amazing things, but then you're just like, oh, I'm like so close. And like, you try not to compare yourself, but it gets in there, you know, it gets under your skin. But I'm like genuinely like happy for all of my friends. I'm just like, God damn, I have to keep working now that I know that you're like inspiring me to do stuff.
Yeah. And I think that that's what it is. It's like, where is the energy driving you? Like, it's not just, I don't know. Cause there's like a type of tired that comes from trying to win for other people, like for another team.
Yeah.
And then there's like a type of like tired because I'm trying to win for my own team. And that could be you. That could be like a cause you believe in.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I'm definitely like, at least I get to like root for my own team. You know what I mean? Like, at least I'm in that position. So I definitely feel like that right now is that I'm like trying to break through on my own and I like really hope it'll happen. And there's that tired, but it's also like, oh, like, what game do I have to play? Like, how many reels do I have to put out?
Yeah.
How many, you know, like.
Like, you do the marketing for yourself because you're not like a celebrity celebrity. You are your own celebrity. The people's celebrity.
I am the people's celebrity. Yeah. Incredible co-opting of activism.
Yes. The people. To be clear, we're not comparing you to Princess Diana yet. Yeah. But hang tight.
My mom would love that. Yeah. Imagine if my mom had like commemorative plates of me instead of Princess Diana.
If there's one person's face that brown moms will never stop wanting to eat off of,
it's Princess Di. They love her. They love her.
Because she was the like colony queen. Like all the colonies were like, this one.
And then she dated a brown man, you know. And then she was so elegant and she got a pixie cut, but somehow when I get a pixie cut, it's a problem.
I saw that. You looked so good. You looked so good in it. I really like that. And I also do really enjoy, because I feel like every like brown person, so like I'm non-binary, but like I have long hair, but like every brown person is like kind of feeling that out for themselves if they were socialized as a woman.
Yeah. No, my mom definitely, like, I had my pixie cut and I went to an Indian wedding and people were complimenting me on it. And she was like, I told her not to get it. And I was like, Mom, they're saying nice things. Like, calm down.
They're on your side. Like, I get that you have a script, but like, actually, you need to switch to the next page.
Yeah.
I actually have a question, which is going way back. So, folks, go back with us to when Pallavi said that you made a promise to yourself when you moved to LA. You made a promise to yourself that you were gonna like invest in stand-up and put more time into it, which to me seems very, it seems like an interesting commitment to make for someone who's like going into a PhD program, which is like pretty intense. And they try to convince you like you will not have a life outside of this. So like what was the thinking behind that?
I just knew that I loved it. And I also was like newly single and like newly moved to LA. So like I pursued stand-up as like my thing. And I was like really owning it as like my single thing, because I had put a lot of time and effort into the relationship that I had been in prior to that. Mm. And I was so happy in the end that I got to pursue it on my own, and that I got to explore that voice inside myself. And so I was kind of like, okay, yeah, I'll go hard at my PhD and I'll go hard at stand-up and those will be my thing. Mm. I also had a dog at the time as well. I had friends, you know, I had like a whole life, but I didn't think that stand-up would like take so much. I just didn't know what to expect of it. And I was kind of dumb about it. And I'm glad that I was dumb because it allowed me to keep going, you know?
I think it's really interesting that you like talk about you got out of a relationship, you're newly single, and then you took up stand up. And the way you're describing stand up is the way I think a lot of people would describe a relationship, is they're like, oh, I don't know where it's going. Like, it's just a thing. It's whatever. Like, you know, we'll try it out. It's a fling.
Yeah.
And then they're married.
It's that thing with like in Thank You Next where she's like, I'm in a new relationship with me.
Yeah. Know? And then everyone's like, who's Aubrey? Is it Aubrey Plaza or Aubrey Plaza and Ariana?
Ari.
And she was like, no, bitches, it was me all along.
Yeah.
But that's what it's like when you find your passion. I mean, I want to hear how you experienced it, because I feel like that is what it's like when you find your passion. I've heard that that's one thing when you find your true love, is that like you feel like more of yourself.
Yeah, 100%. That's exactly how I would describe it, is that I felt like more like actualized as a full person and not just relying on like external validation from other people in terms mm-hmm. of, you know, their successes and propping them up. And I think it's really important to build community in that way and to like help people and to receive help in the same way. That's something that I've been exploring a lot more lately. But I also think it's really important to like be sure, more sure of yourself and like know what you want. And I don't think I had found like, I loved science and engineering. That was mm-hmm. my passion. I'm not going to deny that. And my passion changed and shifted. And this was something that I think encompassed more of me because I was able to express more of me. Mm-hmm. I think I just definitely felt like more fulfilled and more excited to like, that, like the fact that I get to write jokes for work, like that's crazy. I'll never get over that. That's amazing.
And also the way that you talk about like your schedule, like you're able to, you have the freedom to disappoint yourself, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something I'm so glad that you said, like science was also my passion, because I feel like
yeah.
that's something that people don't understand, but I'm actually meeting more and more. It tends to be like API folks. Like it tends to be people who like are coming from this cultural lens of like, you're committing and going to do excellence in an area. And the general like sense of that is like, you got to pick one area. Cause if you pick more than one area, you're not giving that one area its due diligence. You're not giving it like the excellence and the commitment. But like, I'm meeting so many people who like are in love with multiple things. They are polyamorous for their passions.
I'm not poly, and so I was like, oh no, I don't know if I want to describe it that way.
No, I'm also
my brain is so like monogamous romantically, but I get what you're saying.
You are, no, literally you're a serial monogamous, because you're like, yeah, I was in love with science, and then I just found this thing that was like, I shifted, it's a better like yeah. it's a fit for like, well, my lifestyle, which
I
is great.
I still love science and engineering, but mm-hmm. like I did have that thing during the pandemic where I felt like I'd been called like a jack of all trades for most mm-hmm. of my life by my parents, by like other people around me. And and even in like high school, even the friends that I was with, I was like jumping around from friend group to friend group, like during lunch, like saying hi to all these different people.
Humble brag that she was super, super.
I wasn't. I wasn't popular because people would get mad at me. They would get mad at me for like not eating lunch with the same group of people.
Oh my God. You were the Benedict Arnold of your high school.
I was the Benedict Arnold. Yeah. I was the Benedict Arnold of my high school. And
the Princess Diana of comedy now. I said it. Brown moms everywhere.
I'm about to die so soon. I'm gonna die before my time. A
couple years left. Gotta get your due diligence out of him.
Amazing. No, so like, yeah, people would like hold that against me in high school too. But I in college too, I was like around all the dorms. I like different groups of people and doing different things.
Where'd you go to college?
Leadership and stuff. I went to Caltech in Pasadena.
Nice. Yeah. So I was wondering because I was like, how much, you know, because the school environment can be really different. And I would believe, yeah. I know people have gone to Caltech and like it is very focused on like the work that you're doing seems to be the vibe. Yes.
Yeah. But it's also like it kind of, the connections that I made there, I think, really stayed with me and like will throughout my life. And mm-hmm. so I think that I also value like the community and also the kind of like morals that it left me with. It's kind of weird to talk about coming from like a STEM school, but we had like an honor code and you weren't supposed to cheat. And like it went very against like.
Don't all schools have that?
No, but like it was, I think it was like, it was an honor code in which like we could have take home tests and like open book exams uh-huh. and we had to follow the rules. Like open book means you can use these things, but not another person. And like, if you took extra time, and it wasn't an infinite time exam, you would draw a line and write the rest of your work. And we were expected to do this. And it was really looked down upon if you cheated, because that meant that you were like, you know, not telling the truth, not finding the truth. And I feel like my undergrad really emphasized the importance of the truth. Mm-hmm. And so like I went to a master's and a bunch of people cheated and like only me and my friends from undergrad were like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, this is so like, you're in grad school. You don't have to cheat. Like if you don't want to be here, don't be here, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's something that like that honor code was like highly emphasized. And so like, that is something that I take away from it more than like any like fact or figure, you know what I mean? Like, so it's kind of like weird, but there were a lot of people in my undergrad who were really good at like a lot of things, just bringing it back to exploring all these different topics that we enjoy. And it was kind of like unfair in like a crazy way. Like the hot girls were also really good at physics and I was like trying to keep up with them. You know what I mean? Like it kind of dashed stereotypes of nerds, you know,
that's a because really they good were so point. Good.
Yeah. They were so good at so many things because they were great at like learning and you can like learn anything, you know? And so that's like what I took from undergrad is that life is unfair in bad ways, but also it can be unfair in good ways. And like what I was saying is during the pandemic, I was kind of like, fuck what everybody thinks, you know, I'm tired of being called a jack of all trades. Like, I just want to do what I want to do. And I feel like my career and also my personal life, like benefited from that. And that I started volunteering more. I like literally spent like half my time, like doing volunteer stuff during the pandemic. And I, you know, I'm okay. I survived.
Yeah. Cause I feel like there's this panic. So do you know about the Knapp Ministry with, led by Trisha Hersey? It's on, I mean, anyone can look it up. It's just like on Instagram. And she has a book out and basically like the ethos is rest is revolution. And she talks about, she's a Black woman. So she talks about like from the histories of Black folks in America, like literally the right to rest is embedded in like control over their bodies. And I think that like those are such important lessons that we should all understand and also like are so deeply embedded in us that it's hard to get past it. Like you were fine. You were volunteering. Like, I'm guessing that means that you weren't working because like, you know, unless you have like a trust fund or something like that. And like, I'm sure that was some level of like emotional or intellectual like insecurity about finances, which is something that like I feel so deeply. Like I live in New York. I'm like, you know, I'm a grad student, so I'm making grad student money. And like, I just worry about it all the time. And I feel like there's not even enough that I could save up. And like, sometimes I talk to my therapist and she's like, but if you think through it, like you can tell that some of that is held in your head and you can think through that, but some of it is held in your heart and that's going to take time.
Yeah.
Aw. I know. I have a really good therapist. I cried a lot today. Yeah.
Aw. I cried a lot yesterday.
We should cry together tomorrow. Oh my God. Aww. Yeah.
Yeah. I think also the other thing to keep in mind is like, ideally, if you're not Princess Diana, life is long and you don't want to go through it not living. So for me, like I'm seeing my like family and friends like get these houses and have like a lot of work to do on the houses. Mm. And, you know, like they have all this stress with all their to-do lists for like the plumbing and the painting and all of that stuff. Cause they're all like new homeowners. And for me, it's like, maybe I really want to own a home. I really want to like foster kids. Mm-hmm. I really want to like have dogs. And it's like, I am spending a lot of money right now, like fostering and taking care of my dog and stuff. But it's also like, how much money would I save over like years of like not being able to live my life and like not being able to have pets, you know, mm-hmm. like to try to save up. It's like the whole, yeah, like you need to like, but not buying a Starbucks latte isn't going to get you a house. And it's yes. also like, you don't know what's going to happen. So like do it in measured ways, yeah. but you don't want to like give up on your today for the promise of a tomorrow that yeah. might not happen.
I think that's so true. And that's also tied into like, to go back to your TikTok where you talked about being tired. I feel like tiredness and stress and like all these things that are part of life and that you'll run into no matter how you live your life. Like the question ends up being, are they like on the path you want to live? Like, are you going through the stress because you're going through a home renovation because you really care about like the other side of it? Or like, are you going through stress because you're going through a home renovation because you know that like your neighbors are going to like look down their nose at you if you yeah. don't renovate your house?
Yeah. Or like whoever comes to visit or this like idea you had in your head of what it should be.
Mm-hmm.
I've been interacting more. I had this moment where with a family member where they didn't know I was on antidepressants and they like asked if I wanted to have a drink. And I was like, oh no, I'm not drinking right now. And then I was like, oh, that reminds me, like I need to take my antidepressants. And then their reaction was like, oh no. And I was like, I'm fine with like, why are you oh knowing? They were like, yeah. I just brought up giving you a drink and now we're talking about your depression. And I was like, this seems traumatic for you, but I'm okay. You know what I mean? Like even that like little interaction taught me like, there's like such a range of like perspectives on like just neutral things. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like antidepressants for me are like an amazing thing that have like given me a freedom and a release from pain. And antidepressants for other people are like a reminder that sadness exists, you know?
Yes. Like, yes. Cause they would have no idea otherwise.
Yeah. And I'm like, it's not a problem for me to talk about it, but it's like that polished, you know, perception that people have of like other people's lives or like mm-hmm. what they do or don't want to engage in. They like, I don't know. It's just things get to be too high stakes, whether it's like your yes. home or your like yes. your appearance or whatever.
I am going to come off as a stalker. But that's good because I am a stalker. I am low key a stalker. That's what research is. If anyone asks,
that's engagement, baby.
Yeah,
man. As long as those reels are getting fucking views, dude.
All I do all day is like and then unlike your videos and go back.
Oh my god, why are you unliking?
No, because then I can like them again.
You keep liking
then
them.
I can because it counts.
You gotta
count.
Like save them. Apparently, like saving them and sharing them give you like the algorithm boost.
All right. No, that's
thank
great.
You.
I always wonder, would it be more worth your time to just like take the time? Okay. So think of yourself as like an hourly worker. The amount of time that you would get paid for doing this amount of like putting together reels and like engagement and like all this stuff. What if you just bribed Meta? Like, what if you
bribed Meta?
Yeah. Like, what if you just found someone who worked there and had control over the algorithm enough and was just like, slip them like $30 and was like,
I don't think that's how the algorithm works.
And then they were like,
but if there was a
no,
cheaper
it'll be
way.
Like lines of code. And then, like, but the exception is
for me,
there's one account.
The one account. Knowing me, my account would get hacked and then somebody else would get all those views. I remember like I was in India this summer and my cousins were like, oh my God, she has this many followers on Twitter to like one of their friends.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh cool. How much did you pay for them?
Oh
and
my
like
God.
Just casually. And I was like insulted. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? And he was like, oh, I don't know. Everybody just pays for their followers here. And I was like, no, bitch, I'm trying.
No, but it's like antidepressants. It's like how for you, they're, you
yeah,
know,
exactly.
It's just medicine. But, you know, some things are loaded. Some things are trauma for people.
Followers or trauma. Followers or trauma. You heard it here, folks. Legit. If you have followers, that's a trauma response.
That's a trauma response. If you're doing well on social media, that's a trauma response.
That's a trauma response.
Yeah. It's all a trauma response. You heard it here first and last, probably, hopefully. I was thinking of a bit that you did on Instagram. People want to follow you and then check it out. And there was like, you were talking to someone in the audience and this person was like, you were like talking about antidepressants and the person was like, I just got off antidepressants. And then you were like, oh. And then you were like, is it good or is it bad to like get off of these drugs? Cause I feel like that's how it is. Like you can't gauge a fucking thing when you start talking to a person about mental health. Like, you have no idea.
You don't know anything about anybody.
Because everything is a trauma response.
Well, also, like, you just don't know people's histories. Like, I remember, even still, I'm still learning about the experiences people have in their personal lives. Like, even as comedians, you'll be friends with someone for 3 years, and then you see them do a new set, and it's about their dead brother. And you're like, I had no idea.
That's a comedian thing, too.
That's a full comedian thing to be like, I'm not going to talk about this till the bit is perfected, you know?
Exactly. Like, it'll have the most, like, impact if I wait and it's a surprise for all my friends.
Yeah. So it's like, I feel like you really don't know what's going on in people's lives. Mm-hmm. And especially like in comedy and the creative spaces, like you get really close to people for like certain amounts of time and you have your like friends or whatever, but like the outer circles, like you'll, you know, work on a project with someone and get really close. And then maybe they move to New York or LA or, you know, whatever. And then you kind of like keep in touch with them as you can. And so much happens in that time, like between, you know, seeing that, being close to them and like seeing them again.
Yeah.
And so you have like no idea like what's happening in people's lives. It's just like crazy, especially post-pandemic. People have changed so much.
Yeah. I feel like that's also like there's grades of that. So like there's your close network, there's like your colleagues. And for someone like you, who is a public figure, I mean, like Princess Diana, who might have made comparisons, but like similarly to Princess Diana.
I have been cheated on. Yeah.
So. You have followers. You have been cheated on. I mean, you're on someone's plates. I don't want to say whose, but like your face is somewhere. Someone's eating off your face. You can quote me on that because it's
being recorded. I start crying. I'm like, thank you.
I would just like to thank whoever is eating off of my face. But I feel like there's like a level where people, like you can feel like you know someone. You can feel like you know someone if you're their fan. You can feel like you know
The parasocial relationship.
The parasocial relationship. Because I feel like it's not a clean break the way that we often think of, like, parasocial versus social. Like, it's sometimes – there's always the in-between because, like, you'll go, you'll perform at a show, and, like, I'm sure sometimes you talk to people in the audience. Like, you, like, realize there's, like, connections and things like that.
And then sometimes there's also, like, people who are, like – up and coming comedians and like you don't know that yet, and then like at first when you interact with them it feels more like parasocial, and then later they're like in your field and they're your peers and you're like, oh, okay, cool, like we now know each other. And then like, you know, so there are like sometimes like weird interactions where people are like overly like personal with you, and then you find out they're hot and you're like, this is fine, you know.
I want to point out that you were talking about how how you enter spaces and you're like, oh yeah, like I went to Caltech and then I realized like there is like really like what we classically think of as hot girls like studying the same things in my classes doing things like that. Yeah. And this is not connected to what we were saying at all, except that you talked about hotness. And how if you are a hot fan of Paula V, you should shoot your shot. Like, go for it. But don't go for it in a way that she can't very easily turn down. So, like, you know, like, no stalking. Don't do what I did. I mean, you're not as hot as me. You can't pull it off.
You can't pull it off, guys. Come on.
You can't do it. I mean. So, I mean, I guess my question is, have you found that you can still be the hottest person in the room in comedy? Is that why you moved to comedy?
Oh my God, no. People in comedy are so fucking hot. I mean, they're like crazy people, but like they're also like really hot people. It's like very frustrating being in Hollywood. They're, like, I have, like, I wasn't even aware I had a body before, almost. You know what I mean? It feels like, I mean, I knew I wasn't, like, I had, like, weird, like, microaggressions.
And also, like, you can see Pallavi's social media. Like, obviously, she's super attractive, but I get what you're saying about, like, standards and stuff. Like, it's about what's valued as.
Yeah. And like, I did have, like, I mean, I did have hangups and stuff. I grew up in Utah. And so like, I wasn't white. So that was a problem.
Wait, so you grew up I'm finding out multiple things. So you grew up in Utah, and as a white child in Utah, you were not white.
Wait, you said as a white child in Utah, I was not white.
You're not white.
I'm not white. What? You just said as a white child in Utah, you were not white. And I was like, I wasn't a white child.
Well, I assume everyone in Utah has to be a white child.
Oh, yeah, sure. That's how you get it, for sure.
I don't know. I'm trying to make sense of that post. Ray, you're welcome. We're making this really easy on you for the editing.
Yeah. No, so, like, I had, like, all these, like, microaggressions, like, insecurities and stuff that I dealt with, like, growing up as a minority surrounded by, like, blue-eyed, blonde-haired white people. And so I was aware in certain ways. And then, but I, like, didn't put my value on my appearance. And then when I came to LA, it, like, got referenced more. So I just became, like, more aware of it. And now I have, like, I mean, I had some insecurities before, but I'm, like, more acutely aware of it. And I noticed, like, when I go to New York and stuff, I feel less aware of it because there's, like, more diversity people there.
Yeah.
In body type and color and, like, everything. And it's fucking awesome. And I love it. But in LA, it just feels like, kind of cookie cutter of, like, the same kind of valued traits. And it's just like, I don't want to have to think about this. Mm-hmm. That's another problem I have with, like, putting out fucking reels and shit. It's just like, I have to be, like, more aware of what I look like. That's bullshit. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do that. I do want to act, but I don't want to be aware of what I look like.
No, because I feel like it is really different, because when you're acting, this is another one of those things where I feel like there used to be a really clear separation. So when you were acting, it was like, you're on a set, you show up, you take hours in hair and makeup, like, because you need to have access to a camera to be able to, like, be an actor, or, like, access to stage or whatever. So, like, you weren't doing any of these performances in your home. And now it's like, people will, I mean, and that's part of it. People will take videos after they get out of the shower. Like, people will really, like, include authenticity as part of their look.
Yeah.
And that's part of what's valued, too, because I've noticed that, like, I don't know, there's a certain level of, like, conventional attractiveness you have to have to, like, carry the look of authenticity. Because, like, if I showed up the way that these, like, off-duty models are showing up on Instagram, I wouldn't look like that. And I think people would be like, we don't value, like, they wouldn't click.
Yeah, I always say this about fucking Alicia Keys and, like, all those people that were, like, in the no makeup movement. Yeah. It's like, why are the bitches with the good skin leading this movement? Fuck that. Like, you know what I mean? All of the beautiful women were like, we don't need to change ourselves. And it's like, you might not, okay? You seem fine. Yeah. I am not doing the same as you, however, and I will keep wearing my makeup, okay?
And I feel like that's what body positivity ends up being about. And this is why I'm always, like, I'm skeptical of, like, a lot of the leaders in the movement, and I'm really, like, admiring of them, but I also, like, I noticed that
it's sus.
Yeah.
It's sus.
Because there's people who step up to the plate to be leaders and then are not paid attention to, and I'm like, is it because...
Or paid attention to in a very negative way, like, the way, like, Lizzo is treated, for example.
That's literally what I was thinking of. I was thinking of the fact that we've got, like, a beautiful Black woman who is, like, leading the movement, and, like, no one can deny that she's putting in the time, and yet, like, considering the success that she's had, like, she should be having much more recognition for that.
Or, like, just not as much hate. I think a lot of people, like, you know what I mean? I think that's the main thing, is that there's, like, she does so many amazing things, and then she gets, like, so much fucking hate, and it's, like, ridiculous. Did you see her People's Choice Awards acceptance speech, by the way?
I didn't. I haven't watched it yet. Wait, tell me about it. Yes.
She brought 17 women on stage with her who are activists in different areas. And she introduced each one of them one by one the area that they were activists in. And it was fucking amazing.
I love that too, because you know that, like, she knew that she couldn't do that until she had enough power that no one's going to, like, take her off the stage.
Yeah.
Because you have to have that level of power. And so she, like, Lizzo's really good at, like, she's good at the actual, like, music and craft and art that she does. And then she's also good at, like, managing that level of, like, I think she has experience with people, like, wanting to make her less and wanting to, like, take her platform away because she's really good at keeping it.
That's a good point.
Well, because I was very thinking,
savvy in that way.
I mean, I just, like, I was thinking of an interview that I heard with Jamila Jamil, who was talking about, like, when she was heavier and, like, she is, like, we know what she looks like. And she was just saying that, like, when she was heavier and she tried to, like, speak out about body positivity, like, people would make fun of her and cut her down. And, like, literally they started listening to her when she began looking more like a model.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
I mean, I'm not surprised either, but I'm also, like, we're getting to this point where audiences have so much autonomy. Like, we have so much information. Like, we have Reddit. Like, we can find out anything. We can share anything.
Wait, we have so much information. We have Reddit. Yes. Let's hold there for a second.
No, what's the comment?
I just love that that's, like, that's the apex of the information generation.
Literally, what would the internet be? I mean, what was I gonna say? Twitter?
Oh, God. Not right now. Definitely not right now.
Yeah, how is Twitter doing? I haven't checked on it in a while.
Let's not talk about it. I'm blocking every ad. I hate it.
All right. That's perfect. You heard it here first. Ads don't work on Twitter anymore. That's about what it is. No, but, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, people have, technically, if you are an audience member, and I think we're all, like, whether, you know, we're also up on the stage, like, we're all also audience members.
We're consumers.
Yes. And we're, like, aware consumers. Like, we know more about the processes behind branding and behind, like there's...
I feel like sometimes we do, and sometimes we're just taken for a loop because of misinformation. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
that's
true. It's hard to tell. I fell for misinformation, like, 2 weeks ago. Like, you know, like, it's... I don't know. I feel like it, because there's so much, it's... We feel like we're getting ahead of the manipulation, and then it happens all over again. And we're like, what the fuck? What's the right thing to do? I have no idea. Mm-hmm. You know? But yeah, I do think that we have more direct access to the stuff that we like, for sure. Mm-hmm. I feel like as artists and creators, and then also as audience members, we have, like, more of a direct pipeline to people and you know, creators that we love. Mm-hmm. So,
and again, good. If you're hot, like, Paula V's DMs are closed, open. Paula V's DMs are open to any Black students who are interested in free tutoring. So, definitely DM. If you're in that situation or you know of someone who's interested, spread the word.
Yeah.
So I actually wanted to ask about City Council, because I feel like this is a show that really, like, you do have to know what's going on. You have to kind of parse through the misinformation in order to, like, talk about, this is, like, limited to LA politics or?
No, it's not just LA politics.
Thank you for that.
No, not just LA politics. So there is an emphasis on, like, local political shenanigans, because I have access to that because I find it interesting. But we also talk about, like, national headlines and pop culture and comedy, just, like, a lot of different things. But I did, you know, have several interviews with LA politicians, you know, who ran, like, really interesting, like, grassroots campaigns. I had Kenneth Mejia, who got the most votes out of any elected official in the midterms for city controller. He ran a wonderful corgi campaign. And
wait, what does that mean? Corgi campaign?
His corgi was featured on all these billboards with him. You know, it was wonderful. He had a lot of Gen Zers, like, who knew their shit, running his stuff. He had an amazing campaign of volunteers. And, like, I genuinely think a lot more people should be paying attention to how he ran that campaign, because he provided information. He would have, like, billboards of how much we spend on the LAPD versus homelessness versus, you know, like, healthcare or whatever, or education. And that just got people talking about, you know, the data that he presented in a really, like, easy to consume kind of way. So I had him on. I had Hugo Soto Martinez, who is now my city council member.
Hell yeah.
'Cause he got elected, progressive coalition in the city council. I just,
we don't endorse anyone, Rahman, by the way,
yesterday,
but also,
okay, fair enough.
We
I endorse.
My views do not reflect the views of any organization that is associated with this podcast or not associated with this podcast. Corporations are people.
What?
Okay. I would continue. I would keep hearing.
And then I had Nithya Raman, who's a city council member, on literally yesterday, and I'm, like, editing that podcast today to put out. And so I'm, like, really excited to kind of have those like local connections. And the point of the podcast is to encourage other people, even if they're in other cities or even other countries, to get like involved locally and like build that community. And so I also do things like have a mutual aid babe of the week to shout out, like somewhere where they can get involved. Cause a lot of people like continuously tell me they're like interested in getting involved in the community. Mm-hmm. And then they don't do it for like months or years or whatever, because they don't know like how to start. So like I provide direct, like, you know, organizations that they can go to and like donate or volunteer with them. And so, yeah, it's like, it's, you know, we cover everything, but it's like really encouraging people to participate in their community. And, you know, because we protect us.
We protect us.
Yeah.
I mean, it's true. You say it. I say it in a funny voice, but it is true. And that's actually, yeah. So that's actually something I wanted to ask you about. I know we're about out of time, but I have heard that or like felt that people have the reaction sometimes when politics or like some kind of education is combined with comedy, is combined with entertainment, they're like very afraid that people aren't going to take it seriously. And it's this like serious thing. And politics are serious. But I've seen so much content of people, like, I feel really effectively like speaking this language. So is there a balance that, like, is it difficult to find that balance, I guess, between like the education that you're doing and the entertainment, as someone who's like also a writer in so many ways?
I think it can be difficult when you're first starting out. But I think at this point, like, I'm not going to make jokes about things that I'm like, I just can't, you know, like there's some things that I am also sad about or frustrated with that I'm capable of like making a joke at that time. And I feel like it's tasteful enough and it doesn't detract from what's happening and it kind of makes it more consumable. And there are other times where I'm just like, really sad about it and I can't make a joke about it, and that's okay. And because there's a lot of like sad news, there's a lot of like sad things that are happening or like really frustrating things that are happening, and where I can be myself and make those jokes, I do. And there are other, like, that's who I am too. It's like I do have like a serious streak in me as well, and I get like on my high horse like ranting and stuff. And so I just, you know, I try to be myself and have that authenticity come through on the podcast.
Well, I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Do we want to, I feel like that was, a bit of a downer into an upper. Do we want to end on an outright upper?
Let's do it.
Yeah. what's a good, I mean, we started off talking about your dogs.
Somebody please adopt my foster dog.
Yes.
I'm in LA. He's very sweet. He's got googly eyes, like we said. I'm going to keep fostering dogs. I think I'm actually bringing a couple dogs that I fell in love with in India from India to the US. I'm trying to like work with a rescue.
Global adoptees.
Here. Yeah. Cause there's so many strays in India and they're all over the streets, and like the moms keep having babies and the babies, you know, like don't all survive. And so I'm trying to bring a couple of the ones that like I rehabilitated while I was in India back, and I might keep the mom and then like adopt the baby out. We'll see.
All right. So you heard it here first, not last, but you heard it here first. Bobby is currently fostering dogs. We'll continue fostering dogs. And so if hot people who want to hear more about your dog fostering adventures and want to hear more about your work, want to connect with you in any way, again, hot people, we know all of you listening are hotties. How can they connect with you? How can we find you?
You can find me at Pallavi Ganalan, PallaviGunalan, everywhere. That's my Instagram and my Twitter and my TikTok and all of the things. And yeah, find me there. Listen to City Council, spelled C-O-U-N-S-E-L, like counselor, City Council podcast. And join my Patreon on City Council because I need to be paid for my labor.
Money. Money makes the world run.
Yes. Patreon.com/City Council Show.
All right. Follow Pallavi. Fund Pallavi.
Yes.
Everything. We love you. Thank you so much. So wonderful
love
to
you.
Talk to
Thank
you.
You. Thank you. Great talking to you too.
Yay.
Real Talk Unfiltered is powered by Linda Yi as lead designer, Nico Buonasora as talent coordinator and social media manager, Catherine Ali Zaslavsky and Raymond Liu as producers, Tammy Cho, Michelle Hanabusa, and Tristan Paulet as our executive producers. Music by Jason Chu, Alan Z, and Mio Soul. Created by Catherine Ali Zaslavsky. And of course, everyone on the Hate is a Virus team.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Real Talk Unfiltered. For more episodes like this, be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.
Follow our guests to keep up with their new projects and check out hateisavirus.org to learn more about our other initiatives. If you have questions or comments, message us on social media. We love hearing from you.
We'll see you next time on Real Talk Unfiltered.